Hello and welcome to Cannon Fodder. Today is Thursday, the 9th of January, 2020, and it's just after 11 a.m. Eastern Time as we record this. Of course, it's 3 hours earlier where our main man, Brian Hedger, the Dispatch's fine Blue Jackets beat writer, is located at present. Where are you now? Have you made it down to San Jose, Brian? Are you still in L.A. or what's going on?
I found my way to San Jose.
Okay.
And
stop there. That was. You can tell he just woke up. He found his way to San Jose. La, 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 la. And the Jackets tonight play the San Jose Sharks in the Shark Arena in downtown San Jose, or just on the outskirts of downtown. Good building, good fan base. Sharks struggling. They're coming back from off a road trip. And the Jackets, Brian Hedger, I, Michael A. Race, ask you, or just posit, very hot right now. It was just last week that their 12-game point streak was broken with a 3-2 loss to these same Sharks in the Nationwide Arena. That ended a 8-0-4 point streak. And currently, the Jackets still carry and will carry into the game against the Sharks tonight a 9-game 6-0-3 road point streak. So, Brian, before we get into what's happened there since you got to California, let's cover this streak since we haven't spoken in a couple weeks. It kind of came out of nowhere. Brian, how did they do this given all their injury problems?
I'm still trying to figure it out, actually. It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know, when you really think about it with, you know, them running their injury number up to, I think it was 11 at one point if you counted Brandon Dubinsky, who hasn't played all season.
Right, it was 11, yeah.
Yeah, it was 11. I mean, that's like more than half of your skaters.
And you're talking about guys like Cam Atkinson and Josh Anderson and Ryan Murray and Oliver Bjorkstrand. These are important players. 11 guys who are important to the opening day roster and gone.
Well, what was interesting, I mean, if you really, you know, take a step back and look at the overall point streak and then I guess now this road point streak, is that, you know, all those guys you mentioned, you know, they came in with high hopes this year and they actually played pretty well through most of the up until getting injured, but they didn't put the puck in the net. You know, like if you look at this team's stats for the whole year, you know, they've outshot teams, they've held teams to, you know, they've limited shots pretty well. I mean, all the things that you look for in a team, it's a pretty good team, have been there all year except for the goal scoring. There hasn't been enough goal scoring. They've gotten great goaltending pretty much all year when you consider that, I mean, you know, Korpisalo, I don't say he was shaky, but, you know, he picked it up in November.
Like rock solid. Mid-November on rock solid until he gets injured, Brian.
Yeah. And then, of course, Elvis Merzlikins takes over and goes from the last time we had seen Elvis Merzlikins, I mean, other than the Patrick Kane shootout goal that, I mean, he just had no shot on, goes cold into the game against one of the best shootout guys in the world.
This is after Taves had abused Korpisalo, well, with a move, and then Korpisalo came up with a torn meniscus. That was against the Hawks on the 29th in the Nationwide Arena, and Korpisalo will be out. He had corrective surgery, a scope, and he'll be out probably another 3 weeks at least. In any case, so he's carried down the tunnel on that night of the 29th, or evening of the 29th, I should say, and out trot.
It's a controversial time game.
Elvis Merlikins goes out to face Patrick Kane. That didn't go well. But, Brian, ever since the coaches had to, he's been imbued with forced courage. He's had to play Elvis Merzlikins, and what's happened?
Yeah, you know, I think that for both, you know, John Tortorella and Elvis Merzlikins, you're right. It was a situation where both of them didn't have any choice, right? Like, Tortorella didn't have any other choice. He had to play Elvis Merzlikins because Korpisalo's not available, and you're not putting Matisse Kivlenyks out there or, you know, Vanni Veivalainen, at least not right away. This was, you know, Elvis had to step up. And then from Elvis's standpoint, and I think this did help him, I think it helped him get his focus. I think his focus had been off pretty much the whole season because, you know, he had not been in an actual goalie battle, you know, like an internal goalie battle for years, for like 4 or 5 years. I mean, he was the guy in, you know, HC Lugano. He was the guy for, you know, Latvia. So, like, he never had to, like, beat another goalie out for playing time and then, you know, lose that battle and then have to sit for weeks at a time, you know, or games at a time and not play. So, you know, once it just became this is you, man. Like, you know, our season's riding on you right now. I think that locked his focus in just immeasurably. And he was good right from the get-go. I mean, really good, really sharp. I mean, he won that game on New Year's Eve against Bobrovsky. I mean, that couldn't have been any better for a Blue Jackets fan, could it? In the way that that whole thing went down, Werenski gets a hat trick on New Year's Eve. You know, the new goalie steps up and just almost gets a shutout. Doesn't, I mean, 4-1.
Right.
He beats Bob. And Bob's return to Columbus. You know, just, I mean, it couldn't have been better for a Blue Jackets fan. So
that was a hell of a night in the building. The building was electric on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Well, it almost felt like the playoffs a little bit, you know, where people were, you know, on. I mean, they were fired up in the building. So, I mean, I guess when you're getting back to what you said about the streak, how they've done this, it just doesn't make any sense because the guys who are supposed to be doing this, I mean, let's face it, the guys who are supposed to be doing what's happening right now are not doing what's happening right now. It's been other guys. It's been their fill-in. It's been their understudies. You know, the guys who, the body doubles, basically, from the, you know, Cleveland Monsters. It's been Nathan Gerby has come in for 8 games, and he's already got 5 points, 3 goals, 2 assists. You know, it's Kevin Stenlund comes in from Cleveland as an emergency call-up. He's got 3 goals, you know? I mean, in, what, 7 or 8 games or 9 games. So it's been the fill-ins, and it doesn't make any sense because you'd think that, you know, okay, well, it's time to tank and it's time to go just look forward to the draft. And instead, here they are tied for the second wild card, at least in points, with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Well, they were until the Flyers won last night. So they pulled one out against Washington. All right, we're going to cut out here for just a second and hear from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudavara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
And so the Eastern Conference, the three atop the Atlantic and holding those automatic playoff bids right now are Boston with 61 points, Tampa Bay with 54, here come the Lightning, and Toronto with 54 points. And in the Metropolitan Division, Washington atop with 65 points, Islanders with 57, consistently good this year. Pittsburgh doing something akin to the Jackets, decimated by injuries almost to the level of the Jackets. And in third place in the Metro with 57 points, and as hot as anyone over the last month, and including the Jackets. I think they won 10 games in December, which led the league. Anyway, wild card one, your Carolina Hurricanes, the Thieves, they have 52 points. Philadelphia with 52 points. I think Carolina's up on percentage points or rows. My notes here aren't that extensive. In any case, wild card one, Carolina. Wild card two, Philadelphia. Two other Metro teams. And just below Philly, they were tied with Philly for a day, or down on percentage points, but with they had 50 points and were tied with Philly until Philly's victory last night. But those are your Columbus Blue Jackets, who over the span of the last month are 10-1-4. That's 24 points in 15 games. And included was a 12-game point streak overall, and that was one of the three longest in team histories. And currently their 9-game road point streak, I think, is the second longest in team history. So they're doing some things, and it's quite remarkable given the extent of their injury troubles. I think, Brian, one thing we have to talk about is Zach Werenski, who is, we always knew how good he is. He's been a star for some time now. You know, he already has the team record, shares it for goals in a season by a defenseman. His offensive numbers have been extraordinary for a young goalie. I mean, we always knew there's greatness in him. Right now, I'm seeing a superstar. I think we all are, and it's not just me. But he has, you know, what is it, 7 goals in his last 5 games, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, 7 goals in his last 5 games. He's got 3 multi-goal games in his last 5 games, which has only been done by 3 other defensemen in the history of the NHL. I believe I have to get that stat right. But basically, it's Bob Orr and Paul Coffey.
Yeah, pretty
right?
good.
I mean, and it's Zach Werenski. I think it's 2 other ones. I think there's 3 that's ever done it, and he's one of them. And the other 2 are in the Hall of Fame, and Zach Werenski's a real nice fella.
Also, I mean, both, I mean, extraordinarily high, Orr led the league in scoring at times. I didn't see him until after his knees were compromised. But when you talk about Orr and Paul Coffey, who put up telephone numbers for the great Oilers teams, and I actually covered him for a year. It was late in his career, but there were days when he felt really good and you watched him skate. Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey, two of the greatest skaters in the history of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
and you know what? Zach Werenski, we're not going to say he's one of the greatest skaters in the history of the sport, but he is awfully good at skating. And what's really interesting about him
is he's good at skating.
Well, I mean, like, he's a plus skater.
Yeah.
But,
oh, he's a terrific skater. And again, I'm not saying he is either, but that is something that does link him to that company. His skating is sublime.
Well, his shot is out of this world. Zach Werenski's got a great shot. And the other thing is, I don't want to give too much away here, but I think I'm going to work on a story coming up about, basically, he's got a guy that he works with in the offseason. They all have a guy they work with in the offseason.
Yeah.
And this guy, I believe he actually kind of works with Red Wings prospects as well, but he's a Michigan guy, of course, because Zach's a Michigan guy.
Yes.
And University of Michigan. And anyway, Brandon Nerotto, I believe is his name. And the guy does a ton of research and just, it's all about, like, okay, he looks at all the top players in the league. Like, let's just say Brent Burns, right? Brent Burns, another offensive defenseman. He'll chart, like, where exactly on the ice Brent Burns scores goals from. Right, and then he'll just, like, for his whole career, and then he'll take another offensive defenseman, Erik Karlsson. I mean, he's got all this info, where they scored goals from, and he puts zones, like, in the offensive zone, like, on the ice, and he'll number the zones, and he'll tell, like, Zach, Zach was talking about this the other day, and he basically says he'll get a text from this guy every once in a while and be like, hey, you're not shooting enough from zone 7, or something like that, or you need to get to zone 5, like, more often for shots. And he's like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that was happening, however. And these are areas where, like, the puck is often there for a defenseman. I need to call this Brandon Nerotto. I'm going to talk to him, I think. But I found that interesting.
Yeah.
That he was saying that there's even points where he just fires the puck on net without even seeing, like, I mean, if he can get a shot through, he knows from certain zones, he's like, I'm just going to, okay, from this zone, I'm going to put it high left, because that's where people score goals from. I mean, it's really interesting, and I'm not saying that. I'm not going to credit his crazy goal streak just for that, but, I mean, it's kind of a new approach to it that I've not heard of.
Incredible release. We've always known it. But he's in one of these jags now where he shot one, and I think it was Jonathan Quick got his glove on it. And if you've been watching Zach Werenski of late, when he made that save, you went like, oh, wow, I can't believe he didn't score on that. When he's shooting,
right,
you expect
yeah.
it to go in now. It's like automatic. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, isn't it funny how it's like this hot streak happened right after the All-Star stuff came out?
Yeah.
And he wasn't mentioned at all by the NHL. And, you know, they had Seth Jones, obviously, at think even though he Seth Jones has not had a Seth Jones type year yet.
No, he's starting to pick it up though.
Well, I mean, as an all around player, he's been great.
Yeah.
The offense hasn't been there. But anyway, he gets the all star bid. They have that last man in vote thing. They name Nick Foligno to that. Probably because the league, you know, knows who Nick Foligno is or whatever. And they don't mention Zach Werenski at all. And then right after that stuff comes out, 7 goals in 5 games.
Let's put it this way. He leads all NHL defensemen in goals, and he's not on the All-Star team.
No, and I think what's really interesting about this streak is, or his hot streak or whatever, he's gotten so much better defensively.
Yeah.
He really has. I mean, if you just watch him play now as compared to even last season when he was still trying to figure it out. Remember they had him on the third pairing last year trying to kind of figure things out, second pairing. I think when he was trying to figure it out defensively, I think that sort of, I mean, it couldn't help but kind of take away from his offensive game a little bit. I think he did finally figure it out. I mean, just watch the puck come in the end of the defensive zone now if Zach Werenski's back. I mean, he is walling guys off from the puck immediately. It's fast. He's using his he's a big kid. He's using his size and his skating to defend now.
Anticipation as well. You know, this Jackets team is not devoid of talent. They struggle to score. They don't have a, what you'd call an elite. I mean, their game-breaking scorers that they had the previous 2 years, who led the team in scoring each of the previous 2 years, who holds the team record for points in a season, the guy left for New York. All right, so it goes. They don't have that game-breaking forward anymore. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this program. But we can't lose sight of the fact, or I think sometimes we do, that their defense is very deep. It's very good. You know, they have two terrific pairs. They have one, maybe the best pair in the league with Werenski and Jones. You know, they've got lefties, they got righties, and Torch, you know, he should roll those guys. Now he's started doing more of rolling the forwards, which I know there have been discussions between the coach and the GM about, one, the handling of Merzlikens, and obviously that problem, if you want to call it a problem, solved itself when Korpisalo went out. And the other was, you know, Torts gets bunkered in a game and his lines get terrifically short in these one-goal games. And given that they lost, prior to this streak, they lost 9-1 goal games. They were 11-14-4 before this 10-1-4 streak that they're presently on. So 11-14-4, they'd lost 9-1 goal games, shortened the bench. I don't trust this guy. I don't know that guy. When really, you see them now, they have, obviously they're doing something very well in Cleveland, where it's kind of like the old Red Wings team's hedge, where you can bring guys up and plug them in, and they're playing the same system. That hasn't always been the case here. Anyway, guys are coming up, stepping into the lineup fairly comfortably, and when they're rolling four lines and playing the style that they play, they're just grinding teams down and frustrating them. And you get a couple goals here or there from a Nathan Gerby or a couple three from a Zach Werenski. You know, all of a sudden, they really believe they can win every night.
Yeah.
Take it from there. I just leave that there. They've been obviously talking about that. They've been explicit about that. But there's a no superstars in this room sort of mentality, and they're playing very well together. It's really interesting to watch, given the fact that they've had anywhere from, you know, 7 to 11 people on injured reserve at any given moment over the last 2 months.
I thought it was interesting when they were at their kind of their peak during that streak. If you watch them, it was exactly what you're talking about. Defensive anticipation and the quick, you know, poke checks, using the sticks to break up plays both in the neutral zone and the defensive zone. I mean, they were frustrating teams so much. I mean, teams were trying to get through them. This is a regular season. Most teams aren't used to teams playing like this in the regular season, and this team is. Kind of like it's in the playoffs, because it was in the playoffs, because they were on the verge of having their season end way more prematurely than they wanted. Another thing that I found interesting in these last two games, though, and I don't know how many people, you know, stayed up to watch them.
And by the way, the last two games, I should mention, were back-to-back victories at the LA Kings 4-2, and then at the Ducks on Tuesday night 4-3. So it was back-to-back wins in Cali. Jackets now tonight, Thursday night, they'll play with a 10:30 start at San Jose, looking to this is the third game of a 4-game trip, which ends in Vegas on Saturday night. Anyway, I just wanted to stick that in their hedge. Please continue if you can remember in your sleepy stage.
No, I mean, the past two games, and by the way, if they do win tonight in San Jose, it'll be only the second time in franchise history that they sweep a full-on California trip, all three California teams. The other time was, I think it was 10-11.
Yeah, that was extraordinary. That was near the end of the year. It was the half season out of nowhere. It was something, if I remember correctly. But I'm sorry, please continue.
Yeah, the last two games, I don't think they've played all that great, to be honest with you. I don't think that they've had it going as far as like what we were talking about, the you know, making things difficult on the other team and breaking up plays. They've done a good job of blocking shots in the defensive zone, but they have not been able to clear their own zone, or end zone, as John Tortorella often calls it, or usually calls it. They've struggled. I mean, Seth Jones on Tuesday night had to play a 3-minute and 26-second shift, you know, at the end of the game.
In the third period, right?
Third period.
Yeah.
He couldn't get off the ice. I mean, they couldn't get the puck out of the zone. They couldn't win a face-off. They kept icing the puck.
He was one of the guys that iced it. He just needed a 30-second break there.
Yes, and he did it twice. So, they haven't exactly played like they did during the 12-game streak. And that's been three games in a row now. If you consider the first Sharks game that you mentioned earlier, they lost. So you go from that one, they lost that one. They got off to a horrible start in Los Angeles, but Elvis Merzlikins held them in there, and they were only down 1-0, and they come back in the second period with 2 goals in their leading. The next night, and then they win that game. The next night in Anaheim, another horrible start.
Yep.
When I say horrible, they're bad starts. I mean, like, the Ducks were all over them to start that game. Then they kind of, you know, Elvis holds them in there, 1 goal early, but then, you know, he keeps them to 1 goal. They come back in the second period again. They lead going to the third. They make that one hold up. They've got to figure out a better start, you know, tonight against the Sharks, because I don't know how many games in a row you can kind of keep using that formula and not get your doors blown off.
Right.
But they're finding ways to win, though. I mean, this is my third year on the beat, and every year it seems at some point in the season, and it's been John Tortorella the whole time, his team's wind up using that phrase, well, we found a way to win. You know, they usually do find a way to win, and they're doing that right now, whether they play poorly or they play great.
Let's kick this around before we sign off, Brian. This notion, it's been a running theme of this program for most of the season, and that is, what do you do with all these young players? What do you do absent an elite offensive player, a game breaker? Do you make trades? Do you just roll these young kids out and play them? And I think, you know, as we've taken this theme, what we've said pretty consistently, or at least it's our opinion, and I just mean an opinion we share, happen to share, and that is let it ride. Let it ride. I think part of that right now is, you know what, you have all these young players here. Just roll the four lines and play them. Just roll the four lines and play them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, or at least what they're starting to do. And I think it's what you just continue to do. You're right. I mean, people are starting to talk a little bit now that they're back in the playoff race. Like, who are they going to add at the trade deadline? I don't think you add anybody. Maybe you add, like, some low-level insurance like they did with Kincaid last year, or just anything that you think can bolster the team without spending a lot of capital. Because this is a really good draft that's coming up. And no matter whether you're picking in the top five, which would be really nice if you could pick in the top five, or you're just, you know, picking in the first round. I mean, there's a lot of talent from top to bottom in this draft. And, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen, at the very heart of it, is a super scout. To be honest with you, he knows how much talent's out there. And I just don't, I mean, he might, you never know. I mean, I can't predict what he's going to do. Maybe he will trade a first-round draft pick again and bring in what he thinks is an impact player. But
unless it's Patrick Kane, I don't trade a first-round draft pick. That's just me.
No, but you know what? I don't see
a Kane-like deal. Yeah,
I'll tell you what. I don't think they would do another rental after last year.
And, why?
You know, having those guys leave. So, yeah, just let it ride, like you're saying. You know, let it ride. If you make the playoffs, great. You know, that's a good thing for the franchise. It'd be, what, the fourth year in a row that they the playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal. And, you know, you never know what happens when you get to the playoffs. So that'd be great. And if you don't make the playoffs, then, you know, who knows? You're going to get a pretty good draft pick either way.
Well, I spoke with Jarmo yesterday morning, and he was up much earlier than you, Hedge. I just want to point that out. And they have their amateur scouting meetings going on their pro scouting meetings, excuse me. So that would be sort of their initial prep for the trade deadline with their pro scouting meetings. And then they're going to convene and begin talking about their amateur scouting reports when they get to Vegas over the weekend. So that's that part of the season as we ramp up toward the trade deadline. Blue Jackets going well. What do they have coming up? They're at Vegas, obviously at San Jose tonight, at Vegas on Saturday.
Vegas is Saturday.
Right, and then that'd be the end of a 4-game West Coast swing. They come home and play Boston Tuesday in the Nationwide Arena at 7 p.m. After that, on the 16th, they got Carolina, and on the 18th, New Jersey. We should say again, they are in the playoff race. And, you know, one of my kids is like, still just blow the whole team up and go get Lafreniere. You know what I mean? It's like, trade everyone. They're all mediocre. They don't have any elite talent. And, you know, he plays too much NHL 20, I think, where you can do these things with a click of a button. They're a little more complicated than that, as I bust him ad nauseum. But I think maybe there's a one-on-one deal out there. If there's a reverse Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson trade to be made, and I don't mean trade Seth Jones. If someone's pitching you for, like, Dean Kukan, or I think Gavrikov is a terrific player. But if there's a high-level trade to make and you want to dip into the depth of your defense, you know, go ahead. I tend to think that probably will and probably should wait till the draft. You have a good look at things. You know where you are in the draft. You manage your assets, and if there's something out there for an upgrade at that point, you do that. But anyway, it's all ahead of them. Me, let it ride right now, Heads. Just roll all these kids out and play them. Let them follow Nathan Gerby, who's been terrific. Zach Werenski, go ahead. Keep shooting, young man. Boy, what a terrific player. But that's it. That's your schedule ahead. Brian, you got anything else to add? Any new injuries we should mention before we sign off that two players made it back earlier this week off the injured reserve, Emil Bemström and Marcus Nudavara, who's working through some rust, judging by the last couple of games. But you got to work through the rust. Anyone else prepared to come back anytime soon? There was some chatter about Atkinson, Brian Hedger.
Yeah, he's going to be the closest one, I think. I mean, he's the only other one that's injured or that's on the injured reserve that's on the trip that I know of. And so he had a really good practice. I mean, he was really skating hard on Sunday in El Segundo in outside of Los Angeles. And it looked at that point, I mean, he was skating with Dubois and Nyquist at that point in the practice, through the whole practice. So it looked like, you know, hey, he might come back in. In fact, he, you know, kind of said, hey, as of right now, I'm in the lineup for tomorrow, but it's 50-50. So, you know, when game time came around, when the game day came around, I should say, that 50-50 went the direction of sitting him and keeping him out. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain.
And he's had one before. Those are tough.
And it was a different ankle. So at the same time, that's a double-edged sword, right? Like, if it was the same ankle, you'd be like, oh, boy, you know, this thing, how long is this going to take to heal? Well, now you have one on each ankle, basically. Because he said that the other ankle never really truly fully healed the way that it should. You know, like, there's still times where he kind of, you know, will make a motion or you'll make a move and feel that one. So this one is the same deal. These are frustrating injuries because, you know, they sometimes take a long time to heal, but they sometimes just don't ever really fully heal. I mean, this might be something that he has to deal with the rest of the season to a certain extent. I mean, he'll be able to get out there eventually, but when that is, not sure.
Yeah. Well, the old adage is, you hear from players who have had high ankle sprains, is they wish they just broke the ankle.
Yeah.
It's cleaner, it heals better, and it heals much quicker. But anyway, there you have it. Thank you, Brian Hedger, reporting from San Jose. And Jackets at the Shark Tank tonight, and then at Vegas, finishing a four-game trip on Saturday night. That's at Brian Hedger. Follow him on Twitter. Look for his stuff at dispatch.com. Follow at Dispatch Alerts. Follow our esteemed producer, and I use esteem with air quotes around it, Patrick Flaherty at the Podfather 2. I'm at Michael A Race 1. Had a column today. Hedge continues to blanket the team and produce top rate material. So thank you. Check it out, and Patrick, blow us out of here.